John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, if you're wondering, I'm slowly getting back to Seattle. Left Indianapolis this morning quite early. Flew to Denver, where I'm at right now. We'll fly back after the 4 o'clock segment today. Get back around 7 o'clock. But, yeah, earliest I've ever left a combine. 31 years I've covered this. And, you know, there's plenty of stuff going on. Lots of stuff. Still a lot of stuff I can cover by phone and all that stuff. And we've got, you know, a lot of breaking news that's going. We'll get into that with the five biggest stories of the day. But before that, just to give you a couple quick updates, looks like Chris Jones, a defensive tackle of the Kansas City Chiefs, is going to get franchised. No surprise there. I mean, he's considered, you know, he and Jadeveon Clowney are considered two of the best defensive players in this free agent class. Tom Brady looks like he's going to hit free agency. No talks going on right now with the New England Patriots. Demoris Smith, we'll get into this in a second, had his press conference this morning, and it also was meeting with angry agents over the deal, but he's confident that this deal is going to pass, and sometime in the next 2 weeks, the CBA for the next 10 years is going to be ratified. But let's waste no time. We're right into it right now with the five biggest stories of the day. Top five brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
There is a pretty good group of guys, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that all comes down. There's a half dozen guys that have been effective, maybe more than that, half a dozen that we're looking at for sure, that have been effective and put up some numbers and could add to the club and could help us. And so, you know, we just have to see how it sorts out.
Yeah, of course, that half dozen, of course, is headed by Jadeveon Clowney, who did talk to Josina Anderson this morning and told her that he'd love to get back with the Seahawks, but you have to keep your options open and see what you can get in free agency. And so he's going to be open to anything, but you know, at least he's listening. He is going to be a free agent, as we mentioned. Chris Jones, who's a defensive tackle, not a defensive end, is going to get franchised. Yannick Nakoa, I would have to anticipate, is going to get franchised. And then you start looking at the list of other guys that are going to be available. I mean, you know, on the older set, you've got certainly you have Everson Griffin of the Minnesota Vikings, who wants to go back to the Vikings, and they want him to go back. But will that happen? Then, of course, you have Dante Fowler, who had 11 and a half sacks. You know, he's going to be, you know, up in the mix right now. On the lower end, I mean, Vic Beasley is available, former first-round pick of the Atlanta Falcons. Then you've got even Bruce Irvin, who had 8 sacks last year for Carolina. He's going to be available. So there are options out there that can help out, but this team has to make sure it does secure it. But you know, talks, I'm sure, in the next day or two, we're going to start with Clowney. They're going to meet with his agent at the combine and start talking about contracts. Anticipate nothing being done, and of course, you're not going to see very many deals done here in the next couple days, mainly because nobody knows what the cap is. I mean, they anticipate it's going to be $200 million, but that hasn't been negotiated because what's happened is that they've been working on, you know, trying to convince the players to take the CBA. So my guess is that, you know, Seattle probably will go to 18, maybe 19 million a year to get Clowney. He's going to be wanting 21 or 22, and then he'll see maybe if there's going to be, you know, more money out there on a good team. Now, remember, he does not want to go to a team that's not going to win. That's why he likes his team so much. So they still have a decent chance to get him done. It's hard to read right now if it will get done here in Seattle, but it's certainly the big priority of this team to get Clowney back in a Seahawks uniform.
Number two.
All the voices you heard, these are all highly paid players. Twitter is a big, big social medium right now, right?
Correct.
I have not heard one rank and file player tweet anything about voting no, yeah, or anything about this deal, well, yet at all. And again, the rank and file make up most or a bigger percentage of the NFL. And that this deal does help them, I think, more than others.
That's Mike Golic Sr. talking about the CBA, and it's a big topic today. Yesterday, some of the selected agents were in a meeting with Demoris Smith, and it was pretty robust. You can see how much they did not like it. But as Mike Golic said, what you're seeing is the complaints coming from two different sides. One complaint coming from, you know, players who have been in the league 7, 8, 9 years and realize the wear and tear in the body is going to take to have 17 games. But as Mike Golic correctly said, 60% of the league is making minimum salary. And so what the Demoris Smith did is get major, not major, but good increases in the minimum salaries. For example, you go from 510 this year to about 610 next year. So that's about $100,000 increase in salaries, to a point by 2029 that the minimum salary is going to be about $1 million. But of course, that's got to be the buildup, and it has to be the acceptance of the 17 games. And of course, you know, if you're the 60% of the league that's young, you're going year to year. You don't know if there's going to be you know, your chance to stay in the league. And then you take the position, it's like, okay, here's my options here. I can vote down this deal and then maybe be on lockout and on strike and get no money next year or little money next year, or take this deal and get $100,000 increase. That's why, you know, DeMoris does think that this is going to pass. Does he know for sure? No. I mean, this is going to be a week to 2 week vote to see where it's going to go. But naturally, and again, there's nothing wrong with the complaints of Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Maurkice Pouncey, J.J. Watt, and others. You know, they're just expressing what they know and what they've been. But of course, I mean, the top players are even going to get more money out of this, because if the cap goes up to 48.5% and the cap is going to be, you know, for the revenue going to the players, you know, 48.5 on what's now going to be probably 210, 220, $1 million. It's big money for the best players, but in the end, right now, the vote has to start.
Number three.
Here's the pitch. Swung on and clubbed to left center field. This is drilled. Fairchild back looking up. This one is gone. Onto the grass in left center field. That was hammered. A solo blast. Jose Siri. And the Mariners have extended the lead. It's now 5-2 M's.
So a 5-3 victory over the Reds. That's two in a row for the Mariners. Jose Siri getting 1-for-2 with a solo home run against his former team. Justin Dunn went out there. Two innings, two hits allowed, one run and two strikeouts. And so today, Logan Gilbert, the top pitching prospect, is going to pitch against the White Sox. You'll be able to hear the replay of the game starting at 7 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Number four.
Then each team would have only one tag, one franchise tag. But we still don't know if and when this deal will be approved. And until then, teams will have two tags. They have a franchise tag and a transition tag. So if you're a team like the Dallas Cowboys, you could put the franchise tag on Dak Prescott. You could put the transition tag on Amari Cooper, which is something that he doesn't want. So despite the fact that Aaron Rodgers and the Pouncey brothers and Richard Sherman don't want this deal, Amari Cooper should be the one that has his hand way up in the air right now saying, I can't vote yes fast enough so that I'm not a transition player.
Well, what's going to end up happening is that, and again, today's the first day you can start franchising. Because of the fact that it's in the last year of the CBA, you can also add a transition tag. That's one, of course, you don't want. They started negotiations today with Dak Prescott. They made him a $33 million a year offer. That's going to be a little bit light. The talk was that $33 million was one of last year's offer, but that turns out it wasn't true because they didn't talk since September. And so we'll see where it goes. But the way this is going to work is that at least from now until the vote is in, and of course if the vote's in, what ends up happening, you have to take one of those tags away because that's now part of the new deal, and it goes, but right now you're working under the old rules, and the old rules, at least for this year, in the last year of a CBA, is that you can do two tags. So like two teams have possibilities of doing that. You know, Dallas can do it with Dak Prescott, franchise him and put Amari Cooper on the transition tag. Tennessee can take Derrick Henry and put him on the franchise tag at $10 million and then you know, come back and put the transition on Ryan Tannehill. So those things are in play. And again, you have until March 10th to use the franchise tag or the transition.
Number five.
We're going to break everybody down. We're going to look at everything. And again, nothing is solid. Everything is fluid as far as our roster is concerned. We've got an evaluation process we've gone through. We know what we'd like to do. We're going to go forward with those decisions. And again, you guys will see how it unfolds.
So that's Ron Rivera talking yesterday about, you know, Washington drafting a quarterback. But, you know, you figure in the end that's not going to be hand to happen. But, hey, you'll still look to see what's going to be there. They got the second pick in the draft. But also knowing they're going to a 4-3 defense after being 3-4, you know, you figure that they're going to take Chase Young. How can you not? I mean, it works so well for Nick Bosa going to San Francisco at the second pick. And the Redskins get the second pick in the draft. And in many ways, Chase Young, many people think can be better. But a young quarterback, quarterback. I mean, you know, Dwayne Haskins was young, only had 1 year college experience, and didn't do that great. So would you be better served to have Joe Burrow, who's probably going to go with the first pick, or Tua Tagovailoa? I mean, come on. In the end, you know that Haskins is going to be the quarterback there. You know, that's the guy who went to school and just with Dan Snyder's son, one of his sons, and also grew up right near Redskin Park. And he was the quarterback that they wanted. So we can have a good conversation about it. But in the end, they're not taking a quarterback at number two. Hey, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, under further review, big night for Jacob Eason tonight. He gets a chance to throw. Of course, all the workouts start on the NFL Network, and it's going to be on ABC, ESPN. That's going to start at about 1 o'clock today. We'll talk about what the expectations of Jacob Eason is. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
No draft choice in this year's draft has more to gain than what Jacob Eason has tonight. Because what he has to do is, of course, this is when quarterbacks work out, wide receivers, tight ends. They're all going to be out there doing their 40-yard dashes and also doing the drills. But the big thing, of course, is Eason throwing the football, which is his strength. And, of course, you know, debates right now, you know he's going to be drafted very well. I think maybe worst-case scenario, second round, best-case scenario, first round. I know that Jake Heaps thinks that he's going to go in the top 16. And really what it comes down to is that we pretty well know the first three quarterbacks in this draft. I mean, it's Joe Burrow being number one, Tua being number two, and then Justin Herbert from Oregon being number three. But who's going to be number four? And so really, what you can watch tonight is Justin Love going against Jacob Eason, and who can make the biggest impression. And of the two, I mean, both have great arms. I think Jacob Eason has the best arm. But I know that Brock Huard, of course, has studied this immensely. He knows this very well. He was on with Danny and Gallant today talking about what you can expect from what could happen with Jacob Eason and what goes on tonight.
It's UW quarterback time. It's Jacob Eason time at the NFL Combine. What must he do, Brock, to go and maybe get drafted in the spot where Jake Heaps has seen him potentially going, round number one, or even in that same kind of range, round two, round three?
He's got to put on a show tonight. So they moved the combine into prime time. I've kind of been sitting here waiting, waiting to start watching some of the guys run and throw. And you know, I'm one of those guys that does enjoy that process, the eye test of it, seeing these guys' level of athleticism. It's actually one of the things that I really do and have enjoyed over the years. Well, they flipped it around and they've moved some of that timing around, so much so that John Clayton was able to fly home instead of having to stick around for another 3 or 4 days, because he's going to watch it in prime time like a lot of us are. And under those lights tonight, there will be no Tua throwing, there will be no Joe Burrow throwing. So you've kind of got the next guys in line. That's Jacob Fromm, that's Jordan Love out of Utah State, that's Justin Herbert out of Oregon, and then that's Jacob Eason out of Washington. And he's got to put on a show. And if I were advising him, I would say watch Josh Allen's performance at this combine 2 years ago. He was the one that just had an overwhelming wow factor, that when you throw that deep corner or you throw that go route, instead of throwing at five and hitch, take a seven-step drop. Let that receiver get another 10 yards downfield and launch that thing 60 to 65 to 70 yards in the air. If you're capable of doing that, this is your opportunity to show off your greatest strength. It's not your decision-making. I don't think it's your accuracy. And I don't even think it's really the game tape at Georgia and Washington. Your greatest strength is that you're 6'6", you've got a cannon for an arm, and you've got to put that on full display tonight. And if that means, you know, taking a little longer drop and allowing those guys to get down the field a little bit more so you can unleash one of those lasers down the field and create a few of those wow moments, I would advise them to do just that.
You know, Brock says so many good things, and, you know, this is maybe one of the best things I've heard him say. And again, that's irrelevant because there've been so many great things, you know, hearing him through the years. But, you know, what the comparison with Josh Allen, because in that combine, you know, I did get access to watch it, in the dome and do it. And the Josh Allen comparison, I think, is right on. And that what you can see was that I still remember Josh Allen throwing down the left sideline on a nine route. And it was like 70 yards, and it was a rocket, and it was catchable. And so I think that you can make the comparable with Jacob Eason, because, you know, just like Jacob, he's raw. I mean, Josh Allen was raw, and you can see it in his first 2 years. And so what Josh Allen was able to do was, you know, show that arm strength, make the throws, and he won it. So if you're looking for somebody who, you know, put on a big enough show to go in the first round as he did going to Buffalo, that's, you know, Jacob Eason is in the same comparable. And so that's a great, great comparison that Brock has come up with, because, you know, if that show went on just like Josh Allen, you can see him maybe going in the top 16 picks. You know, because Josh Allen, you can see the first 2 years, you know, is a little bit off because he's still trying to settle down. But with the team around him and Josh's great arm, when he got a chance to start early, and he also got a chance to take the team to the playoffs. And so Jacob, of course, the team that he goes to, I think the expectation is he's not going to play that first year or not going to play at all. But, boy, that's the idea. It's like when you watch tonight, and I don't know if you can go Google search and go back to the combine a couple years ago and watch Josh Allen. That is such a great comparison, because, you know, if Josh then was able to, you know, push himself into the first round, and, you know, again, some teams may have first round grades on Jacob, some teams may not at this stage, but regardless, a good show like we just saw there, that will really put him in a position to get a first round pick. And again, you know, the ideal thing for him, as I said on Monday with Jake Heaps, is that you know, he goes to a team that you know, is a winning team. And like, for example, now the story in New England is that there's no conversations at the moment going on with Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, and so the likelihood is he could leave. All right, so now what will the Patriots do? One of two things. They could trade for Andy Dalton. They can sign Marcus Mariota. But also, would they be in a position to get the young quarterback and to get a quarterback with an arm strength like Jacob Eason? Now, he may not be the mobile quarterback they would like, because, you know, one of the things with Tom Brady, and I know the thinking internally with the Patriots, is that, you know, they understand the trends in the league, and they understand the trends to try to get a mobile quarterback. And it's not saying that Jacob Eason is not immobile. He's got mobility, and he's young and all those things, and he got the powerful arm. But, you know, that could be a team that I think could really look at him and maybe take him in the first round, if not take him in the second round. The other team I could see doing it would be the Indianapolis Colts, because let's say if they go with Phillip Rivers, you know, Rivers as a starting quarterback for 2 years, then you can take maybe in the first or second round Jacob Eason, and he's going to be your quarterback of the future. I guess when you're looking at Jacob Eason and you watch him tonight, quarterback of the future is the key word, because, you know, we watched Josh Allen, and, you know, they rushed him. I mean, you know, he shouldn't have been the quarterback of the present in his rookie year. I mean, he really wasn't ready. You can see that he got better, and what he got better in his second year was comebacks in the second half, and then he would go on stretches where he could get hot. But, boy, it's like, you know, I'd love to, like, it would be great to see if they do this on the NFL Network, ABC, ESPN, or whatever, that, you know, they take the picture of Josh Allen and put it next to Jacob Eason and see how the throwing can be very similar. And if Jacob Eason can do what Josh Allen has done, then I think you can see him being a first-round pick. And, you know, with all the changes in quarterbacks and all the things that are going to be going on in the next couple weeks, you know, with the older quarterbacks going to different teams, you know, with Phillip Rivers going maybe to Indianapolis, you know, you can maybe see Tom Brady, although it's funny, well, listening to Bruce Arians was asked about what quarterback would intrigue you if you don't go with Jameis Winston, and he blurted out Tom Brady, even though that would be a tampering violation, because even though he's not in contract, you know, he's still technically property of the Patriots until the 18th of March, but now, or 16th technically, because you can now start to talk to him on the 16th, but boy, what a great comparison that was made with Josh Allen and Jacob Eason. So watch tonight. See if you can see some similarities. And if you do, it's very good for Jacob Eason, the former Washington quarterback. Coming up next, we'll talk to Michael Bumpus as we get to, we'll talk about Jacob. We'll talk about Hunter Bryant. We'll talk about the combine. Lots to go here as we continue along in this combine week. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us in the Zeke's Pizza Hotline is Michael Bumpus. And Michael, you know I'm never going to put you into a trap question. That'll never happen, never has happened, and never will. But I wanted to kind of get you as a player, the perspective on the CBA, and I mean, would you consider yourself kind of in that core group of 60 players that kind of in the first several years had to play at the minimum salary?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. I came in as an undrafted free agent, you know, made the football team the hard way. And, you know, it's tough. You got guys speaking out who are in the 1% of the league who are telling these guys who are probably only going to be in the league 1, 2, maybe 3 years to not sign a deal. And me personally, if I'm in the league right now and I'm in the position I was 10 years ago as an undrafted free agent, I might consider signing that deal. You're going to tell me I get an extra $100,000? And, you know, my life isn't guaranteed in this league. I might take that deal. So I understand where the guys up top are coming from, but they're speaking for the minority and not the majority. The majority of these guys, 60 to 65% of these guys in the league, are playing on that minimum salary. So it's a sticky situation, John.
Yeah, it really is. And that's why I wanted to get your perspective because, again, I mean, and again, I am not critical of Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Marquise Pouncey, Mike Pouncey, J.J. Watt, and others. You know, having been in the league, you know, they've made the top dollar, but also they've seen what it's done to their bodies playing 16 games and the worry about 17 games. But also the perspective of somebody like yourself, and again, what the number is, 60% of the league right now is making minimum salaries. And so the way it works is that if you take this deal, you get the, you know, your base salary will go to like $610,000 next year, and ultimately by 2029. And these are just the rookies, right? This is the first year guys. You'll get to $1 million. All right. Now again, it only goes up $15,000 a year after the first couple years, but you do get up to $1 million for that 17th game if you take that. But also the other part of it is, if you don't take it, two things can bad happen. Number one, you may not get any money next year because they may have a lockout, a strike, and you're not going to be able to win much as far as negotiations because this deal was already done by the Players Association, and they're not going to come back and give them more. And then secondly, you know, the TV money could start to dry up because the networks who could give a 50 to 60% increase in the numbers on TV, you know, they're not going to do hardly anything, particularly one, with a lockout and a strike possible. And then number two, with the election year coming up, and usually ratings are hurt by election years.
Yeah, John, it all comes down to financial stability. And as a young guy, as a guy coming out of college who's a free agent or maybe a late round pick, whatever it may be, a guy who's not making a lot of money, if he can increase his financial stability, he's going to think about it. And then I also feel for these guys at the top who have been in the league 10 years and their body's hurt and they don't want that 17th game. I get it. It all makes sense on both sides. The tricky part is there has to be representation for both ends, for the guys at the top and the guys at the bottom. And could you imagine getting into the league, getting a chance, and then for a full year not getting a paycheck? You know, if you're smart with your money, you'll be able to survive, but your lifestyle is going to change a bit. You know, your potential to make money changes. So I feel for both sides, but if I'm a guy, if I am Michael Bumpus in 2008 and I'm making league minimum, I'm definitely considering this deal. I can make $600,000 coming out of college. I mean, that's a great start to life. But for a lot of guys, that's chump change. For guys who are 8 to 10 year vets, that's nothing. But for a 22, 23 year old kid coming out of college to start your life with $600,000 in the bank, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, and that's the thing that there's like, and I know critics of the deal, and I criticize a portion of the deal. It's like, if it was me, I would have tried to negotiate a deal without the 17th game. But that's me. And of course, I never played. I don't have a body that could even think about playing. You know, I could basically hand somebody the equipment. That would be about it. But what, what you look at is that they say, well, you know, baseball makes 50%. But think about baseball. I mean, you know, it takes you 6 years to be able to get to free agency to a point where you can get a big year. And of course, that doesn't count the time that you're in the minor leagues. Now, the NBA, sure, they have a great system of pay, but of course, they only have to pay 15 players. And so here in football, you know, you have your 53-man roster, which could grow to 55 with 12 in a practice squad. And then, of course, you're going to have, you know, 15 to 18 to 20 guys on injured reserve or some kind of reserve list. So there's a lot of guys that, you know, maybe, you know, getting paychecks. And so, you know, you spread it out. And of course, it's a fungible league. I mean, you can be out of it very quick.
Yeah, it's so hard to compare the NFL to the NBA and the major leagues just because of the things that you mentioned. You know, the major leagues, I mean, I've seen 30-year-old rookies called up, you know, to the big show. And then in the NBA, you know, there's only 15 guys on the roster. And It's the risk. You know, in football, you're risking your body every single play. You are in these other sports, but it's a little bit more difficult in football. It's a collision sport. You're going down to the ground. Not only are you battling other people, the ground never loses, John. You hit that ground, it's going to win every single time. So I hear the comparison. You know, Russell Wilson came out and spoke out and said, you know, the Major League Baseball and National Basketball Association has it right. I'm with Brock. You know, Brock tweeted out he respectfully disagrees, and I'm with him. It's hard to compare the two just because of the nature of the game. Now, the NFL makes a lot of money, a lot of money. So to spread that evenly throughout the league, I think it's fair. So, you know, it's a lot more complicated than people really think it is. You know, you got so many different kinds of football players in the league. You have the guy who's going to play for 10 years, which is about 1%. You have the guys who are going to play for 1 or 2 years, which is the majority. You have 53 guys on a roster, which no other sport has that many guys. You got practice squad players. There's so many layers to this, John, that it's never, no one's ever going to be satisfied. There's always going to be someone who has something to say about the deal. So the guys who are speaking out, who have the voices, have the money. You know, I'd like to hear from these guys who are fighting to make the team, who have 1 year left in their contract. I want to hear what they have to say as well. I respect those guys who have made their money, but there needs to be a little more representation in this conversation.
Yeah, and what I can anticipate, because I know this is what D anticipates, and I was about a bunch of agents who really hate this deal and are campaigning against it, is I think this thing is going to pass. You know, D came out in his press conference today and said he's optimistic that this thing is going to get enough votes. And again, it's because of the 600 and some guys, or the 60% that are getting out there, and they don't make big money. They're making the minimum. So we'll see how that goes. All right, tonight, Jacob Eason gets a chance to put on a great show. Brock Huard, I thought, made a great comparison when he talked about, you know, when Josh Allen had that big day a couple years ago, you know, throwing like a 75, 80-yard pass down the left side of the field on a 9 route that was so good, you know, and it propelled him to assure that he was going to be a first-round pick. Can Jacob Eason do the same thing?
You know, I think he can. You know, and I think the Josh Allen comparison is perfect. Jacob Eason probably has the strongest arm in college football right now. I remember seeing this kid as an eighth grader and thinking, man, he can, you know, I mean, his arm talent is ridiculous. Now, everyone knows he can throw the football. Everyone knows he can fire it from one hash to the other sideline. We get it. I think where he can impress people is with his touch. You know, you hear guys talk about him. He doesn't really have or hasn't shown that he can throw a touch ball. Now, when he has a chance to let it loose, I believe he's going to do that, and he's going to wow everybody. Now it's about, you know, can he make the short throws? Can he put some touch on it? And how he's going to operate? People talked about his consistency a little bit, and that's a question as well. When it comes to just prototypical pocket passer quarterback, Jacob Eason is exactly that. He's 6'6", 227 pounds. I mean, you look at him, you think this guy's the NFL prospect. Now, can he tighten up on the little things? Can he throw the touch ball? Can he evaluate a defense? How smart is he as a quarterback? Can he check out of things? Those are the things that I feel like the questions that he has to answer at this point.
But I'll tell you what helps him, and it also helped Josh Allen, because, I mean, Josh came out of Wyoming, you know, didn't really play against a lot of NFL-type players. You know, of course, where it's difficult. I mean, it's different for Jacob because he played in the Pac-12, where there's, you know, pro players all through up and down teams. But the one thing that, you know, helped Josh out is playing in a pro-style offense. And I know talking to Jacob the other day, talking to Trey Adams, talking to Nick Harris, I mean, you know, they all benefited in the sense that they have a little bit of pro offense experience. You know, the offensive linemen having their hand on the ground in many instances. You know, pro style stuff. Again, there was spread stuff that, you know, Jacob had, college stuff that Jacob had, but the fact that, you know, he has maybe a little bit more pro style offense experience can help him.
Yeah, that will definitely help him, John. You know, as far as the pro style and then the language, being able to check out of things and playing with a fullback. No one really plays with a fullback. You've seen UW line up with a fullback at times. So that's an advantage that he does have. You know, that's an advantage he has over Gordon, honestly. Gordon put up all these numbers at Washington State, but is in an air raid offense that is not going to be ran in the NFL. So those are some questions that he has. So as far as him being experienced in a pro-style offense, that's definitely going to help him. He's going to be familiarized with the pro-style and give him an edge up on some of these guys who are throwing the ball 50 to 60 times a game. You know, it comes down to familiarity. If he can walk into an NFL team or an organization and be familiar with the offense, be familiar with the language, be familiar with the set, that's going to give him an edge up on all competition when it comes down to training camp.
Jadeveon Clowney had a conversation with Josina Anderson of ESPN, my former colleague, and told her that he wants to really get back with Seattle because he really liked it, but he's got to listen to offers. Right now, if you were putting a percentage of the chances of Seattle keeping Clowney, what do you think they are, and what do you think his number can be, both in Seattle and league-wide?
You know, I think we're at a 55% chance that he stays. You know, you listen to him talk, he mentions that he likes the culture, he likes the way they do things here. But at the end of the day, money talks. If Seattle's not going to give him the dollar amount that he wants, then he's going to entertain other guys. You know, I think I heard something about the Colts and the Giants are interested in him. And then you got to go back to his comments after the season. He wants to win ball games. You're not going to win ball games with the Giants, John. You might win some with the Colts. You are going to win games with the Seattle Seahawks. Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have proven that over time. Now he wants 23, maybe 24 million. I mean, that's a lot of money. Do you spend money on this guy? Now, he didn't get the sacks that you'd like, but he filled up the stat sheet. I mean, every category has almost been checked off with this guy. And honestly, I think you do what you have to do to keep this guy. I think you do that, and I think you draft some defensive linemen and develop some of the guys that you have. But he's important to what this team wants to do, and whatever happens, he's going to get the money that he wants, whether it's from Seattle or from someone else. I think he's going to get it, and I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I can't see him going to the Giants, even though they're going to let Olivier Vernon go, because the Giants aren't going to win. Indianapolis, Chris Ballard, that could be a very intriguing team, but Chris Ballard isn't big into free agency. I can't see him paying $21, $22 million. A team that could be intriguing could be Carolina, because it's close to home. You know, they're not going to be a winning team, I don't think, but that could be one that can tempt him, and they are going to a 4-3. David Tepper, I don't think, is fearful of paying anybody. So I honestly think if it's going to be a little bit of a battle, it's going to be between Carolina and Seattle.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, whenever a player has a chance to go home, I think they definitely look at it. And if they're able to pay the money, it really just comes down to money. At this point of his career, he's not going to take any type of discount. He's not going to give the home discount. He's not going to give the Seattle discount. He's going to get what he thinks he deserves, and he should. This is football. You don't know when your career is going to end. When you have a chance to capitalize and make a lot of money and set your family up for years to come, you have to do that. So that's what I want the Seahawks to do. I want them to spend some money. You know, typically they don't like to spend a lot of money, and they have ways of doing things which have worked and been successful for the organization. But a guy like Clowney, you got to do your best to lock him down. And when the team like Carolina comes into the picture, a hometown team, you got to take them seriously. And that's a legit threat. Why wouldn't he want to be close to home and mom and dad and family or whatnot? So Seattle's banking on, one, the culture that they have shown. They're going to win ball games. And I say, Snyder, man, write the check, put it on the table, and go get your boy.
Yep, I agree with that. Michael Bumbus, hey, thanks for joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Always great talking to you.
All right, John, talk to you soon.
All right, coming up next, and of course, hey, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, chance to get you up to date on what's going on at the Combine. With We Go Behind the Lines, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Okay, so big things going on at the Combine in Indianapolis. And, of course, the biggest thing is the collective bargaining agreement. And, again, so to put everybody's mind at rest, this is not a negotiation that's continuing. It's what it comes down to. It's yes or no. I mean, the deal is done. The deal is now set for 10 years, no opt-out. It's going to be one that's going to try to do a better job of taking care of the younger players who are making the minimum, try to do a little bit better at taking some of the, you know, the midterm veterans. It's still going to create an opportunity with the increase in the cap each year, because they're going to have another 1.5% of the cap available, because they're going to take revenue. They're going to take the percentage of 48.5. What this does, it now gives an opportunity for more money to go to the top players. I mean, can you imagine if you have a 21-game schedule, revenue goes up $1.8 billion, and you're Patrick Mahomes, your $40 million deal could end up being $42, $43 million a year. And so that's all there for the players. And again, I'm not saying that they should accept a deal. I'm just hoping they do because I need it for my database and all that stuff to be able to continue grabbing all that stuff. But the rank and file now is going to determine it and whether it was right the way that DeMaurice Smith did it because, you know, here it's supposed to be DeMaurice, his staff and the 11 executive members of the committee negotiating it. Well, guess what? You know, the 11 guys, for the most part, were all playing football when they were doing the 10 months of talks. And, you know, now seven of them don't want this deal. They're against this deal. And you can see, you know, from Russell Wilson to Aaron Rodgers to all that, you know, they don't want this deal because, again, it's the 17th game. And but nevertheless, to try to get the revenue and try to get the minimum salaries up, they negotiated this deal. And again, we're looking at all the numbers. And one of the things with D. Smith holding his press conference today, giving out a few documents and all that stuff, you know, it is a decent increase, even though like 90,000 doesn't seem like much, but where it takes the percentage on the minimum salary for the players. Because, you know, it takes it up $100,000 to a point where in 2029, you know, the minimum salary for a rookie will be over $1 million. Okay, that's significant. And when it looked at a percentage of the cap that goes to the minimum salaries for those guys, you know, it goes up from, you know, 2.8, 3.6%, depending on the cap year, to 5.7, 6.1. So it's like, okay, there is a commitment to get a little bit more money to the guys at the minimum. But the sacrifice is going to be 17 games. And while I would not have negotiated a 17 game knowing where the players stand on this, I don't know, Curtis, where do you stand on this?
On a 17 game schedule from a fan perspective, you know, you can never go wrong with more football. I think we're all craving, you know, football. You know, the XFL has shown that there is an appetite for football pretty much all year round, and I think the NFL going to a 17 game schedule, removing a preseason game, that's going to be good for the fans. But ultimately, this comes down to the players and the owners. And really, and unfortunately, the fans don't really factor into these CBA negotiations. But I think ultimately, the owners are going to get their way. I think we will ultimately see a 17-game schedule beginning sometime soon. I believe, isn't it 2021?
2021, it can start.
Yeah, that's the earliest it can start. I think we're going to see an agreement come into place here. I think the NFLPA is going to vote in favor of ratifying this CBA. But I can't get over the divide between the upper class and the lower class of NFL players. I mean, there is a stark contrast in opinions we have heard over the last couple of days. Aaron Rodgers last night tweeting a statement about the stance he's taken in opposition of it. We've heard Russell Wilson, we've heard J.J. Watt, Tyler Lockett, all these guys who have, you know, put in years in the NFL and are established veterans. They have their stances on it, but you look at guys who are undrafted free agents or guys who are, you know, coming, you know, what's called street free agents or anything like that or seventh round picks or whatever, they're being taken care of under this CBA proposal. And you got to wonder, you know, why is it that there is this such large divide, John, between guys who make the majority of the money in the NFL and guys who don't?
Well, because, again, the wear and tear in the body. I mean, and, you know, again, we can't underestimate that. I mean, Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, you know, certainly Brock Hewitt, they can tell you what it's like to be able to go through all those games and get the hits and all that stuff. And you're seeing that trend going now. You have top players at the age of 28 and 29, even if they're paid well, like Luke Kuechly saying, my body can't take it anymore. I'm out. Andrew Luck was at the prime of his career, and he got out of it because of the pounding that he takes. And again, if you're going to take the pounding and you're under 30 years old, sure, you may have the money, but your body's telling you, I can't do it anymore. And if you add a game to that, I can understand it. So I'm not critical of Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers for saying, no, you shouldn't do it. But also, you know, you can't be angry if the workforce, the rank and file, votes it in because they're trying to take care of their families, and they may not be in a position to be able to get the big money.
Yeah, and ultimately, you got to look out for yourself in these kinds of situations. But you know, you got to wonder could these concessions that the owners have made throughout this process, could they be available if they had waited longer to get this done? I think the Players Association may have had a little bit more leverage if they had waited a little bit longer, but ultimately it looks like it's going to get done, you know, sometime within the next couple of weeks. We heard Demora Smith say,
well, remember,
today,
they had no more leverage, because here's what was going against the leverage. I mean, first off, in 10 months, the two sides came up with this deal. Right. So there was no more negotiation after that. You know, this is what they had agreed upon. This was what they thought the Players Association was the best deal. So that talk is gone. Now, the second part of it is, if you don't have a deal and you're going into labor problems, what's going to happen now is the TV money is going to dry up. And again, these are the months now before the election that you want to try to get a deal done, because it could go up 50 to 60% as far as the TV revenue, because, you know, there's such a good market for it right now. Like ABC and ESPN, you can see right now they're paying $1.9 billion, where everybody else is paying $1 billion or less. Well, that's not going to continue. And the reason is less people on cable. So now what you have to do is simulcast with ABC, you know, be able to pick up a Super Bowl, pick up an extra playoff game, have a Monday night playoff game, and then you can justify staying at 1.9, where the other networks go to 1.5. But if you have a strike next year, they're not going to pay anything. And then the ratings next year are going to go down because of the election. And so you're now negotiating for a weaker position. That's why, if you like it or not, from the Players Association, they knew they had to get something done now.
And it looks like they're going to get something done within the
next couple of weeks. Something done. Yeah. You just don't know if it's going to get approved.
And that's the last step in this entire saga.
I remember Andre Rison's agent. You remember the old wide receiver from the Atlanta Falcons? We would call him up when he would do one-year deals or two-year deals with Andre, and we'd ask him, "Hey, we're hearing this deal's done," and he would come back and say, "The deal is did." Well, this deal is did. It just has to be voted on by the players. Hey, coming up next, and of course, lots of news still coming out of the combine, more details on what's going to be there. We're going to talk to Bill Polian about this, Hall of Fame general manager. He was very active in the negotiations 10 years ago. Lots to talk about with Bill Polian. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.